Welcome to a Friday edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com. I'm John Schmelk. He's Paul Dottino. The phone number for you is 201-939-4513 or hashtag Giants Chat if you want to participate on Twitter. We will get to some of your tweets as the show goes along. As the Giants get ready to take on the Kansas City Chiefs, and Paul, we just heard from head coach Ben McAdoo around 40 minutes ago, give or take. Mm-hmm. What were your main takeaways from the press conference today?
Well, he's really hoping that he can get Kennard and Vernon on the field. He said tomorrow during the ramp-up practice. We know they don't work today.
And both those guys were listed as questionable on the injury report.
Yes.
Kelvin Shepard is doubtful, and the two guys that are out are B.J. Goodson and
Justin Pugh.
Thank you.
Yeah, Goodson ankle, Pugh back. Shepard groin. Let's just keep going on and on about these things. But Kennard and Vernon, he's hoping that they can work tomorrow. He said if I can get them up to 80%, they would play on Sunday against Kansas City. Now, Kennard didn't play last week, but Olivier Vernon gave it a go on his bad ankle. And, you know, there's no question it affected him. I gave him a lot of credit once again for gutting it out. This is a guy who cannot stand to miss time. But he was not the same player. And the Giants know that against a quick-release quarterback like Alex Smith and a guy who also has much more mobility than most people give him credit for, it would be very important for Vernon to be on the field.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, we know about the Chiefs' offense here, Paul. We know that they're explosive. They don't turn the football over, which
no.
When you combine that with a group that's explosive, I think that's a very dangerous combination. They have all sorts of weapons. Andy Reid is one of the best schemes in the league. We all know about all that. So it's going to be a real challenge for this defense at every level to do everything they can, because if they play like they did the last 2 weeks, it's going to be another 50-point game. It is. It's just that's the way it's going to go unless they improve their play from the last 2 weeks.
Well, you know, the way I see it, John, this is a dangerous Kansas City team because they've lost 3 out of the last 4, and they're kind of slumping right now. And this is a team that really believes they're going to be in championship contention. They certainly believe they got a good chance to be in the AFC championship game.
Yeah.
I know they think that.
And
even though their defense has struggled all season, it's their offense now that's kind of back to the pack a little. They need this game to turn their season around.
Yeah, and I was going to point that out, too, because a lot of people said, oh, maybe the Chiefs will let down. It's a trap game for them and all this stuff.
They need this game.
It can't be. Folks, they've lost 3 out of 4 games. They're coming off of a bye week. This is a very important game for the Chiefs to win. And the second part of your point that you brought up, that, you know, it's funny. I've been saying all week, much like you, the Chiefs' defense has struggled. I mean, look at the numbers. 30th to overall yards allowed, 29th against the run, 28th against the pass, most plays over 10 yards allowed, 29th in yards per play, et cetera, et cetera. The numbers are brutal. But then I took a little deeper look, Paul. I'm going to list the teams that the Chiefs have played this year, okay? They've played the Patriots, the Eagles, the Chargers, the Redskins, the Texans with Deshaun Watson, the Steelers, the Raiders, mm-hmm. the Cowboys, and then they've played the Broncos. Every one of those teams but the Broncos could be a top 10 or 12 offense in the league. So their defense has had a very, very tough schedule. They haven't had very many soft landings when it's come to the schedule so far this year.
No, but they only have 8 interceptions on the season, and I know they'd like to have a higher number of those, and quite frankly, they don't have nearly as many sacks as they would like to have. They've been known to be in the past as a team that could get to the quarterback and make big plays that way. They only have 19 sacks, John.
That's true.
You know, Houston's got, what, 7.5?
And the funny thing about it is that they've actually dropped Justin Houston in the coverage a lot more this year than they have in years past, for whatever reason.
So, you know, I understand what you're saying. It's not like it hasn't been a formidable task for them, but I think they'd be the first ones to admit to you. And obviously when Berry went down very early in the year, that was a big, big, you know, shot to their kneecaps. But, you know, I have to believe that they think they can play better defense than they have. But, again, irrelevant. They're coming in here saying, oh, boy, New York Giants are struggling. They've got 1 win. They haven't played very good defense, at least for the last couple of weeks. We need to get well, and we need to get our playoff march going. And that's going to be their mentality. And anybody who thinks otherwise is making a big mistake.
Do you want a random factoid I just saw?
Go right ahead.
I was looking at the takeaways, because you mentioned they don't have that many interceptions. They have 8, which puts them right around the middle of the league. But you're right, they're a takeaway-based.
They've only given away 3.
Well, that's the thing. And I don't want to, you know, they're 2nd in turnover differential. They're +9. Two interceptions, two fumbles on offense for four giveaways, and 13 takeaways. So obviously plus nine is excellent. One of the reasons they are where they are. And that's not a fluky thing, by the way. It's funny. Lance brought this up yesterday. We had Mitch Holtis, who does the play-by-play for the Chiefs on the radio on when we did the Chiefs preview over
good.
The summer.
Good.
And
good.
We interviewed
right.
him. And actually, one of my questions for Mitch, and I hadn't gone back far enough, and my question was, you know, Mitch, last year, and I'll bring up the number right now what it was, you know, I said, last year, Mitch, the Chiefs were a plus 16. You know, do you think that's one of those deals where that's unsustainable and next year that's going to, you know, come back down to zero and all of a sudden, you know, the Chiefs' record is going to drop in conjunction with that? He goes, John, normally you're right. Take a look at the Chiefs plus minus over the last 5 years. And he started listing numbers for me.
And you know why?
This is what the Chiefs do. Their plus minus over the course of the last half a decade has been spectacular.
Before you go with those numbers, folks, understand, they don't give the ball away.
Right.
That's why their plus minus is so high.
Well, here we go. Plus nine this year. Last year I mentioned they're plus 16, tied for the Raiders for first in the league. By the way, Raiders minus seven this year. And my random factoid for the Raiders, you know they don't have any interceptions this season.
I did not know that.
Their only team, I think, with less than three or four.
They're a couple weeks
they
down the
road. They have zero. It was interesting when I saw it. So plus 16 last year, plus 14 in 2015. In 2014, that was the year they had a down year, and that's the year that they struggled. That year, they were minus three. But then even if you go back to 2013, guess what? Plus 18. 2012. That was before Andy Reid got there, I think, actually, or right when he got there. So they were that was one of their bad years, or minus
right.
24 that year. But if you go back to 2013, they've been plus double digit a ton. So this is something that they do, mm-hmm. and it's something the Giants had to be very careful of, Paul, especially if they get down in this game. And that brings me back to the formula. The only way the Giants win this football game is if they run the football, hold the football, keep this Chiefs offense off the field a little bit, have the lead, and play from ahead. That's how the Giants win this game. If they go down two touchdowns in the second quarter, it's going to be really, really tough for them. Maybe impossible.
The Giants are not built to come from behind right now against anybody, okay? Especially against a team that is going to out-sprint them if they get into a track meet.
And the Chiefs
and that's
are fast.
What they will do.
And the Chiefs are fast, by the way. And,
yes.
You know, all this,
that's why I said sprint.
Of course. And all this check down Alex stuff, he throws down the field now. It isn't some short check down offense anymore. They isolate guys, they target matchups, and they go down the field.
Yeah, I mean, let me put it this way. I appreciate that Sterling Shepard had career highs last week. You know, the 11-for-147 was awesome. And I wouldn't mind if he or Evan Engram make a big play or two, would even catch a long touchdown pass. That'd be nice. But the Giants really do need to pound the rock. Again, it's going to be something we repeat practically every week for the rest of the season.
And, folks, this isn't, you know, Paul Dottino pound the rock like he says it every week for the last 3 or 4 years. It's different now. It's
this is
different.
Totally different.
Yes.
This is, it's about the only chance they have to breathe is to pound the rock. You know, it's not about preferences now. This is about survival. This is about the only way that you can make a game competitive. All right. This isn't about preference. It's necessity. I will tell you this. One thing I would like to add, John.
Please, of course. That's before, why you're here, Paul, yeah. So you can add.
Before we go any further.
Yes, please.
I cannot stress enough how important it's going to be for Aldrick Rosas to get himself right, because the Giants cannot afford to have missed scoring opportunities. They may not score a whole bunch of touchdowns. We know that they are offensively challenged. But when they get into scoring range, they need to come away with points. And Rosas is having a very tough time right now. And when he misses a chance to put points on the board, it is further demoralizing to the psyche of this team.
And it's hard to make those points up.
I'm not being mean to him.
Right.
It's just the way it is.
And by the way, I'm going to expand that a little bit here, Paul, to the rest of this special teams, too. You know, missed field goals is a big deal, or they're a huge deal. But.
Oh, they're real good.
Kick coverage.
They're real good.
Punt coverage.
Kansas City's real good.
You can't be shanking the ball out of bounds.
Can we say it again?
You can't do any of that. And you know what? When you get into these situations, you know, sometimes people on special teams, maybe they do take a little bit of a deep breath. You can't take a deep breath against the Chiefs because the guy will run right past it, whether it's Tyreek Hill or Kareem Hunt or whoever they have back there doing special teams for them. These guys can all make big plays whenever they catch the ball. So you got to be really on your P's and Q's. We mentioned the defense already, but the special teams, it's just as important.
They usually win special teams every week. I mean, that's just what they do.
And guess what? If you win special teams and you win a turnover battle, why do you think they've had a good record the last 3 or 4 years?
That's it. Done. Easy math. Real easy math. So, in any event, I hope for Rosas' sake, this kid, you know, he had a baby at the beginning of the season, you know, makes the team, fights off the challenge of Mike Nugent, who kicked well during the preseason. Let's not kid ourselves. Mike Nugent did a quality job here. Rosas simply beat him.
And if it makes you feel better, Nugent missed, I think, a 38-yarder last week for Dallas.
Understood. But the point is, Nugent could not beat out this young rookie who showed a tremendous leg, showed confidence, showed ability, did everything that you could want him to do, and everybody was rooting for him.
Oh, he's a nice kid.
And now he has gone through some really nasty struggles over the past month. And the only good news, and folks, it's a silver lining if you want to look at it that way. I mentioned it to John the other day. The Giants are not fighting for a playoff spot. They're not fighting for a division title. This season is nothing more than an education for a rookie like Rosas, who, in my opinion, needs to learn everything he can from his struggles so that he can turn himself around and become the Giants' long-term kicker. I would hate to see them give up on him, but at some point, if he doesn't turn the corner, they're not going to have a choice.
And he has missed kicks in 4 straight weeks. Makeable ones, too.
Had one blocked.
Not long ones. So it's a worry, absolutely. But you're right. At this point, I would rather let a young kid try to figure it out. And then, look, you're going to bring competition in for him over the spring. This is not be a job that's going to
be. No question.
I don't care what he does the rest of the way. He's going to have competition in here for next season. But use the rest of the way to figure out what you got. And I think that expands then to the rest of the team too, Paul.
Yeah.
You know, me and Lance talked about Ben McAdoo's, you know, Wednesday tape session morning meeting a lot yesterday. I'll get your take on it too if you like. But this year now, and if you're a player, the way you have to look at it is that whatever I put on tape, I'm not only putting on tape for the Giants and the Giants coaches.
Sure.
When I become a free agent, teams are going to go back and look at this. And do I want to be the guy that executes poorly on a tackle when it looks like maybe I'm not that into it? You don't want to be that guy. So, yes, it's the coach's job to motivate, but these players have to, you know, be self-motivated too a little bit and figure out what's in their own best interest, and it's in their own best interest to play well for their future success in the league.
You know, when John Mara and Steve Tisch released that statement this past week and said that we will evaluate everything through the end of the season, that goes for everybody. Everybody. Top to bottom. And so you could not be more accurate, John. And every single player, and I'm going to mention DRC here for just a second. I know we got calls. Guys, I know you're on hold, and I appreciate it. I want to get this out because I think it's important. Dominic Rogers-Cromartie, who had been suspended in week 6, because, you know, he violated team policy, had a little tete-a-tete with coach over, you know, some issues.
What did you call it?
Tete-a-tete.
Nice. All right. I just wanted to make you say it again.
They weren't quite on the same page there philosophically with how they were dealing with a certain issue. Mm-hmm. And what happened this week? Coach McAdoo has named DRC a game captain for the Chiefs game on Sunday.
Along with Evan Engram, by the way.
Yes. And Coach was asked about that today because clearly the media was surprised, given that they have painted this picture that DRC is one of the problems, not one of the solutions.
Well, at one point, he was one of the problems.
Exactly.
Right.
Temporarily.
But
for that week, he was.
Correct.
Since that time, and John, we were talking about this before we got on the air, DRC played a heck of a game the other day.
Mm-hmm. He's trying.
In San Francisco.
Now, look, he's a little bit older now, too, so he's not the same player he used to be, maybe.
But he's breaking his butt.
Absolutely.
This is a guy who did, by the way, on the not finishing plays tape that Coach McAdoo showed the other day to his team, DRC was not part of those cut-ups.
No, he was not. And talking,
because he's breaking his butt.
And by the way, I think the media gets it, too, because he's been one of the few guys in the – he's been more – it's funny. You know, a lot of times you judge players, how they react when things go poorly, and guys won't talk to the media. They'll run, they'll hide, they won't say anything. DRC has talked more since his suspension on a consistent basis after games and in the locker room during the week than he did when this team was good
and
winning
games. As a stand-up guy, too. It's not a complainer.
No.
He's been stand-up.
And he's been trying to be a leader, and it, you know, he's not going to be a vocal leader in the meeting rooms. That's not his way. He's never been that guy. Remember when people tried to make him a leader a few years ago? He's like, I'm not going to do that.
No.
I'll lead by example. But he really has stepped up a little bit, and it's good to see.
And I want to mention that because I think it's important that here's a guy who easily could have been lost to the coach in the locker room but has gone the other way and is now one of the guys, the shoelaces tying it together. And even coach said, you know, we named him captain because we hold no grudges. He deserved it. He's worked his behind off. He's become the guy that we wanted him to become, and he's getting rewarded for that as a team captain for the game. I just leave you with that.
And I wouldn't be surprised if we saw a lot of Ross Cockrell at one of the two outside cornerback spots at times during this game. If you looked at it in the fourth quarter of the last game.
He could play, John.
And in the fourth quarter of the last game, you know, he played a lot of snaps in the fourth quarter.
He's not a bad player. I think the more comfortable he gets here, and they've been weaning him in more and more and more and more snaps as the season goes on, I think Ross Cockrell's going to be on this team in 2018. He's going to be a player they use.
And Ben McAdoo hint at potential lineup changes, too, by the way, coming this week. So we don't know what those are going to be.
He has said that.
I don't know if it's what position, what side of the ball or anything, but we'll see. I only bring up Cockrell because he's one of the guys I think that's a backup that has played well enough to earn snaps in the time he's been in the game.
Totally agree.
That's the reason why I bring him up. 201-939-4513. Len in Columbia, Maryland. Len, I promised I'd get you on first today if you called back, and I'd like to think I keep my promises most of the time, at least. Hi, Len. How are you?
Good, good. Thanks, Sean. You really didn't have to. I'm willing to just sit there and listen.
That's okay.
There's always good callers and good conversation, so I'll wait my turn, but thank you very much. I appreciate
you're
that.
You're welcome.
Boy, this is a tough matchup. You know, I keep looking at this Chiefs roster, and I keep looking at our roster, and, you know, it really is depleted, our roster. And it sounds like it's getting worse from what you said. Geez, Shepherd was here for 1 week, and he's already hurt. I know it's tough to come off the street or off the couch, whatever, and just play in a pro game. You know, you're prone to get banged up. But the roster's pretty depleted. You know, I think we play this as conservative as we can. Make the Chiefs take it on a long field. Hopefully, Rojas can kick those field goals if we get close enough. I think the play calling. I'd like your opinion on this.
Sure.
I think the play calling gets more conservative from the Giants' point of view. The later the down. I think if we're going to try to do anything, we try to do it on first and second down, not on third down.
And I think, Len, to a certain extent, I think that makes sense because once – and now, only in certain situations now. Now, if you're in a third and long, it's hard to go make a big play down the field when you're in third and long because teams are going to be worried about that. If you're going to take shots, I think taking shots on a second and six or a second and five or, you know, a first and ten makes more sense. And I do think there's a certain feeling, Len, that when you're in a third and eight and third and nine, it's almost as important with the way this offense is structured now and things like that to avoid making that big mistake as much as it is trying to get the first down.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. And, you know, if we're sitting like we were last week when Eli, you know, fumbled, if we're sitting there third and nine on our own 39. I mean, run it for a couple of yards, and, you know, if it looks like it's going to be over 50 yards, punt it out of there. Make the Chiefs take it 90 yards.
And you know what? I don't think you have to run it on 38 or 39, but I think what you try to set up then is maybe some shorter passes where you catch guys on the move where they can run for the catch for a first down after the catch, you know, screen passes, you know, but I don't know if you're going to see a lot of those classic seven-step drops where he's trying to throw a, you know, 15-yard in-cut. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know why, though, Len?
Absolutely.
We've
talked about this before. Another 3-4 team on defense. You know, five out of the last seven, you could question what Oakland does. They got a kind of a hybrid 3-4 defense, but you know, we've never handled, we don't handle that 3-4 well. This is a good audition for Jones to see whether he can anchor.
Yeah, Benny Logan's big boy.
I think the jury is still out on whether he's the long-range answer to this, but boy, that 3-4 has always given us trouble, Paul.
Yeah, this is problematic, again, because the guy in the middle is a monster. When you have the oversized guy in the middle playing nose guard or
Benny
nose
Logan,
tackle, if you will.
Oh,
yeah. Benny Logan's a big man.
Former Eagle.
Big man.
That's
the
Logan's
issue.
A good player. If, you know, the other ones that we face going through the rest of the season, they're not outstanding players, but there's something about that 3-4 defense. The last couple of years, we just haven't had the center who can anchor and, you know, handle that nose tackle. That may turn out to be a problem. But,
I think
a good opportunity for Jones over the next 5 to 7 weeks here to show us what he can do. And I think the jury is still out on him as whether or not he's the long-range answer. Hey, let me mention one other thing that I thought was interesting. Lance,
sure.
And I know Paul has done this a number of times. Lance yesterday mentioned about, you know, you just can't cut 40 guys. I mean, there are cap implications. You get into dead money and so forth.
Correct.
And you know, there's another category of money here. I'm going to call it pocket money. You know, if you start getting rid of coaches and people in administration and scouts, a lot of times those guys are under contract. And it gets a little costly. I mean, if you change head coaches, and the head coach has got 2 years left on his contract, you wind up paying two head coaches for 2 years.
That's true.
That gets into the family pocketbook. You know, I Mr. Mara's not the sole owner of the Giants.
No, but
he's got a
true,
family that he
but
shares that
you know
with,
what, though? So. Even with that, they will make the decision that's best for the organization. They're not going to stay here and say, well, you know what, X number of dollars, we're not going to go and do this. If they will do whatever they think is best for the football future of the team.
Well,
in my opinion,
I hope that's the right answer. But you know what? I mean, I wouldn't blame him. I think Ben's... You know, I'm trying to run through a scenario. How does Ben get back here next year? You know, this guy's an okay coach. I mean, come on, man, we're beating him up a lot. I think he's an okay coach. This has just been a weird year. Just many things went wrong. And I'm trying to figure out a scenario. Let me just lay a couple of things out there.
Win some games,
man. You know,
how about that?
You know, if this team goes 4-3.
Right.
You know, I mean, I think you got to think real hard about bringing this guy back.
Len, he bottom
I
line.
I think we're going to play better in those division games,
yeah,
by the way.
Len, bottom line, here's the deal. Win, all you have to do is worry about what happens on the field. Get, you know, have the guys be competitive, have them play hard, win as many games as you can, and put a good product on the field. That's all you can worry about if you're a player or a coach on this team. That's the only thing you can do is do the best you can, and you hope whatever happens at the end of the year works out for you. You can't do anything more or less than that.
We got to win, guys.
Yep.
We have to win. We have to win at home. This family cares a lot about those home wins. You got to win at home, and you got to win division games. And, you know, and if you can get the 4, I know that's wishful thinking. I know it really doesn't look good this morning. But, you know, then you start thinking, hey, maybe we're turning this around a little bit.
Thank you, Len.
Hey, John, thanks for taking me first. Looking forward to the game on Sunday, as always. You know, it's Giants football. How can you not look forward to that? It's going to be a great day. And, hey, let's go Giants.
Thank you, Len.
Let's win a football game.
Appreciate it, bud. Take it easy. What did you try to get in there? Was it about the 3-4 defense?
No. Actually, he was very animate about how the Giants on their third down calls seemed to be much more conservative. Well, think about this. It's only logical, okay? Because what you have is a challenged wide receiving core.
Yep.
Okay? You have defenses that figure, okay, guess what? We know that they don't have the big play Odell Beckham Jr. out there, so we can play differently on third down. We can, you know, chuck up to those receivers. We can do what we want to them, and they're not going to be able to make that big play deep on us. And, by the way, we can also blitz a heck of a lot more. And Eli's going to have to get rid of the ball in 1.9 seconds if he's going to get rid of it at all.
And this offensive line is not designed to block for 5 or 6 seconds either.
No, it's not.
Right.
So it's really elementary, Len. I get your point, but it's like 2 + 2 = 4. If you're a defensive coordinator, you pretty much know that you can dictate to the Giants the limited package they're going to be able to execute on third down, especially third down and long. So is it any wonder that some of their third down plays seem like ultra conservative? Because they don't have much of a choice given the bodies they have to play with.
Let's go to Ty in Maryland. He's up next. We stay in Maryland. How are you, Ty?
Hey, what's going on, guys? Happy Friday.
Happy holiday to you, Ty. What's up?
All right. Well, I'm glad, first of all, Paul, that you brought up Rosas, because it's been like a trend for like the past 3-4 weeks maybe. You know, whenever he's in critical moments, in clutch moments, whenever we had a chance to at least put some points on the board, whether it be late in the third quarter or before halftime, and he's missed those kicks, it's almost like the defense just like shut all the way down to where they were at least still competing to keep the Giants in the game before he missed the kick. So I'm on your side when I say that I hope that he turns the corner, because he does have a big leg.
Yeah.
You know, I like to compare him a lot to Jason Elam that used to play for the
Denver.
Broncos.
Sure, sure.
And he has a very big leg. Now, what I wanted to talk about is comparing contracts when it comes to the Giants' offense, when it compares to the Chiefs' offense. Kelce is used a lot in that offense. I think one of the staples in their offense is that shovel pass.
Sure.
They'll do it.
Absolutely.
You know, and it's almost like the Giants' draw play in shotgun.
Right.
You know, they're going to run it whether it works or not, because it's just a part of their offense.
And, Ty, by the way, they will run that shovel pass for Kelce. They'll run the shovel pass for Hunt. They'll run the shovel pass for Tyreek Hill. So they'll use a bunch of different guys with that shovel pass, too.
Mm-hmm. Right. And another staple of their offense is, I think, they run with Hunt that wheel route a couple of times that's worked. I think you guys talked about it yesterday with Lance Meadow.
Yep.
And when it compares – I like to compare Hunt to Shane Vereen. You know, as far as the passing game is concerned, I really think that we can utilize him more than we have been. You know, I think Shane Vereen is a lot more than just a third down back catching a ball out in the flats. You know, he's a wheel route kind of receiver, and using Evan Engram in the same way that the Chiefs use Kelce, I like to see him, you know, not necessarily with his hand in the dirt. I know he's a tight end by nature, but with our depleted wide receiver core, I like to see him out wide more. And for goodness sake, like, I know the guy is only a second-year player, but can we please see some more of Jarrell Adams, please? Can we please see some more of him? Because when he was drafted last year, a lot of what people were saying about him is his ability to block. Not only that, but from the highlights in South Carolina, the man's a beast. He only got the ball a few times, but every time he got the ball, he made something happen, draggling tacklers, breaking tackles, running people over. I mean, you know, I just like to see him with his hand in the dirt playing tight end and have Engram out wide more. You know what I mean?
You want to play three tight ends then? You want to go with Engram lining up outside, and you want to go double tight ends inside with Ellison and Allen. That's what you want to do?
Adams.
Yeah,
Adams.
Why not?
I'm sorry.
Why not?
Is Paul about to argue against a jumbo package? Is that what I'm about to hear?
No. What I'm going to say is, if you're doing that, I'm punching in the mouth and I'm running the ball down your throat.
Exactly.
I mean, you're going to go with those two
really
tight ends. I'm running the ball. I mean, that's what I'm doing. If you're going to put that personnel grouping on the field, I'm mashing you with the ball. I'm not looking to throw the ball downfield to Engram out of that formation. I'm going to run it.
I like the way you're thinking about this. I like how you're going. I want to run the ball too. You know, I want to pound that rock too. It's always been a philosophy of mine, whether you're 1-8 or 8-1. You run the game to control the clock, to control the time of possession. And I mean, it's not like you can't throw the ball to Engram out of that formation. It's not like you can't throw the ball to Jarrell Adams out of that formation. You know,
I'd give it a shot,
it doesn't limit what you can do.
I'd give it a shot.
It advances it, in my opinion.
I happen to...
Thank you, Ty. Appreciate the call, buddy.
I happen to be more curious about what Shane Smith is going to do, and they activated him last week, and then he didn't really play in San Francisco at all, which was surprising. Why activate him if he's not going to play?
You got so pumped up for him. The first thing I looked at when I got the full play-by-play Monday morning was how many snaps Shane Smith played. I'm like, oh, Paul's not going to be happy.
You know, so I'm still curious as to what he can bring to the table in the run game. I know the running backs keep talking about how they would love to be able to run out of an I set with a lead blocker. But if you're going to tell me that you want to take those Shane Smith snaps that he would get and give them to Adams and go double tight end tight with the third tight end wide, I'll run out of that formation all day.
And you know,
I'll do it.
We actually have seen some 13 personnel over
the past
few weeks.
We have.
Since all the wide receivers got hurt, we have seen some of that 13 personnel.
Not a lot, but a little bit.
I would have to go look at the percentages. I don't know what it is off the top of my head. I can get that information. I don't have it. But we've seen some of it. And I do think the Giants, in some ways, use Ingram the same way the Chiefs use Kelce. Now, Andy Reid is very creative. So it's hard to compare anybody to the way he runs his thing. Because he does
That's it. For sure.
As Steve Spagnuolo said yesterday, he's multiple, multiple, multiple. And he just does so many different things. But you'll see them put Evan Ingram out wide on corners and linebackers and safeties, especially in the red zone. In fact, that's how he caught his touchdown last week. They had him split out wide, and he ran a back shoulder fade for his touchdown. I think the Chiefs probably put Kelce outside more in, you know, middle of the field, long field situations, and the Giants maybe do Ingram. But the Chiefs love to use Kelce on skinny posts and deep things over the middle. The Giants use Ingram on plays like that all the time.
He'll get the whole route tree.
Exactly. Kelce. That's what I'm saying. So, but I think the Giants use Ingram that way, though, too, in a lot of ways. They don't use him quite in the quite as cleverly.
He doesn't go nearly deep as much. In fact, that's one of my complaints.
I agree with that. That's
fair. We're not seeing him split those safeties or challenge that long seam at all.
And by the way, Kelce will go deep on the sideline, too.
Yes, he will. There's nothing he doesn't run.
And if you watch Carl Banks in strategy on Giants First and 10 tonight on MSG Networks, it's MSG 1 tonight. The postgame show is on MSG 2.
Correct.
He's covered by a corner and does a little, like, shimmy go off the line and catches the 35-yard pass on a corner, beats him off the thing. There's another play that we didn't use in strategy that I want to call to use. He chose the other one, where he's lined up on a safety. He runs a sluggo. He runs a little slant, and he goes, and he's got 30-yard, and he catches a 45-yard touchdown pass lined up near the sideline. So you're right. They will use Kelce a million different ways, and the Giants don't use Ingram quite that much. But remember, too, he's a rookie.
Yes.
Give him some time to work into it a little bit.
Yeah, but you know what? Those deep seams and deep posts should not be something that you can't pick up as a rookie.
I don't disagree with that.
One thing about Kelce, Coach said the other day, he equated him to a basketball tight end. So when I asked Landon Collins for the First and Ten show, which you'll see later tonight that John just referred to, I asked him about that. I said, so when Coach says he's a basketball player, what does that trigger in your head, and what do you have to do to defend him? And the two things that Collins identified as characteristics of a basketball tight end, A, he goes up and high points the ball, which makes perfect sense. Tony Gonzalez did that forever. Okay. So did Antonio Gates. But here's the other thing that nobody ever talks about, and it's what makes Odell Beckham Jr. special: his hips. When you've got fluid motion and the ability to rotate your hips and cut on a dime, that, which many basketball guys do on their pick and rolls, et cetera, their back doors, they're making these slashing, cutting moves, and if they're not fluid and quick, they're not getting open for the pass. Well, that's what Kelce has. And for a guy of his stature at tight end to be able to have that hip rotation to get in and out of breaks, that is what allows him to get open so frequently in so many different ways.
Yeah, this is not a 235-pound tight
end. No.
He's 6'5", 260.
He's a big dude.
He's a big dude. And that's the thing that makes him so dangerous and so good. Frankly, given the injuries Gronkowski often deals with, I think Travis Kelce's probably the best tight end of football right now.
I agree. He's certainly the most dangerous, let's put it that way, because of all the different ways he's used. Gronkowski is a tremendous weapon, and I don't take anything away from him.
No, me neither.
But they can't use him in as many ways as the Chiefs use Kelce. They just can't do it.
Yeah.
They can't. He doesn't have the physical athleticism. He's got the physicality, but not the athleticism.
Billy in Jersey, he's up next. Hi, Billy.
Hey, John. Hey, Paul. How are you guys?
Hi. Great, Billy. How are you?
I'm good. Hey, Paul, I don't think I've spoken with you since you had your baby, man. Hey, congratulations on your little girl.
You mean John.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you, Billy, and that's me. I had the baby girl. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Oh, I thought I was getting an echo.
No,
you're all good.
You sound good. Go ahead.
Okay. Hey, Paul.
Yes.
Hey, I don't think I've ever spoken with you before either. What's going on, my man?
I'm doing very well, thank you. How are you?
I'm good. Hey, you're a very versatile, I don't know if I should call you a sports analyst or whatever, but I think the team should actually hire you also to be like a consultant. I'm going to tell you why. Because I listened to you very carefully, right?
Yes, sir.
And I've been taking some notes on you. And there's a lot of things that you've been saying has come to fruition. For example, some of the players during the draft, from the draft, you were saying that if only we can get this player. Every time you put your finger on a player, another team grabs that player. You might need to keep that a secret. These other teams.
You're very kind, but in the interest of full disclosure, Samaje Perine has not really worked out for the Redskins.
I was going to bring him up to tease you.
He
did yourself.
Well, because I'm always ready to face up to anything I say.
And look, nobody's going to be right about all the players that they talk about.
But here's the thing. He's barely touched the ball.
Well, he had two or three games where he was a number one back, and he did not deliver when he was given the chance. You're still on.
I think he's had one game where he had carries in the teens. He's the kind of guy who needs to carry the ball 20 times. And so to this point, I'm very disappointed that he has not been in consideration for Rookie of the Year, but the Redskins have not allowed him to. Now, maybe that's his fault. Maybe that's part of the scheme. Maybe that's just because he's been slow picking up. I have no idea what's going on there. But Perine was a guy that I was pining for, and I was wrong on that one to this point. But maybe next year he'll be better. Who knows?
But, Paul, how can you be wrong when the other team don't utilize the player right? No, you were actually right on that guy. The team is just utilizing him wrong.
Well, I like your way of thinking.
Well,
this is a good caller,
well,
John.
Time out. You know what? Billy, we're gonna know now. Rob Kelly has been put on injured reserve. We will know by the end of the season with Samaje Perine as our number one running back whether or not Paul was right or if I hope that he's wrong so I could get on him about it for a couple of years.
Yeah, right?
But okay, hey, I got an observation here, right?
Sure, go ahead.
Yes, sir.
Ready? All right, check this out. Hey, Paul, you always talk about smash mouth football, right?
Yes.
Get dirty and nasty and stinky in the trenches,
two
right?
Two games. Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, so check this out. We got to give the Cowboys some credit. I'm going to tell you why. They have brought that kind of football back to the NFL. Just you always say this is a copycat league. All these professional leagues, they're copycat league, right?
Yep.
So the Cowboys start running the ball, having some success. Look what they did last year. Now every team is starting to run the ball again. And I am so glad, man, because I got sick and tired of this freaking, I call it pinball football. I've just got sick and tired.
I call it video game football, but we're on the same page. Here's what I would say. Don't discount the Tennessee Titans, who also built a very nasty offensive line.
They were number two.
Like to just run that ball right down your throat. And I think those two teams, more than anybody else,
I agree,
made the NFL take another look at the run game.
Exactly. But they didn't have the success that the Cowboys had. See what I'm saying? Cowboys got all the credit for that offensive line. But check this out. I don't want to hold you too long, but let me give you my observation on our team, right?
Sure.
Okay. Last year, you was at that playoff game in Green Bay, right?
Yep.
You were down on the sideline. John, you were down there too, right?
I was in the booth. Paul was on the sideline.
Okay. Paul, check this out. Was it not cold out there? I mean, extremely cold, right?
It wasn't awful.
The wind bit a little bit more than I wanted it to. Let's put it that way. Especially when the sun went down.
That was the 20s that day? High 20s?
And when it got dark in the second half and the Giants were trailing, every time that gust of wind came through, it was nasty. It was damp, too. It was not a fun night.
My point I'm trying to make is, during the pregame, wasn't it kind of cold? But that's the way they call it, pregame.
It was cold. It wasn't horrible, but it was cold.
but it's too cold to be coming outside with no shirts on, right?
Well, you know, it depends on your mentality.
It was probably a little chilly for shirtless weather, yes.
Depends on your mentality.
Let me tell you what I'm getting at. All right. I don't think any head coach should allow any football player, I don't care if you're a superstar for 20 years, to come out pregame with no shirts on. Okay.
Billy, there's one thing I want you to understand. There have been many players over the years who have done that very same thing in colder temperatures than what the Giants had in Green Bay. And what this is a psychological ploy.
And, Billy, thanks for the call, buddy. We appreciate it.
That players will do to psych themselves up.
Correct.
Dez Bryant does it all the time.
And Ryan Shazier does it all the time.
He's another one.
He did it first. In fact, Dez had done it for a couple years before. Like coming into he did it here, I think.
Oh,
remember that December game a couple years ago? I think he did it here. And look, here's the thing.
It has nothing to do with wins or losses, but it's if the guy's routine is I'm going to jack myself up and he wants to ram his head against a brick wall, he can do that too.
Well, you hope he
whatever you want
to
do. Well, whatever you want to do.
Look, it was like two and a half hours before the game. If the guys want, they can go in and take a 15-minute hot shower if they want and warm themselves back up again. So
I can't go with Billy on that. But everything else you said was right, Billy. I thank you.
Is it silly? Sure, but it's just not that important.
Anyway, please call us again another time. We just got other people to get to, and I don't want you to think we cut you off. Please get to us another show.
We have do us some open lines, by the way, if you guys want to get in here for the final 15 minutes at 201-939-4513. Let's go to Steve in South Carolina. He's up next. Hi, Steve.
Hey, guys. How you doing today?
Doing Hi. Great. How are you?
Good. This is more of a question for Paul because I know he was present. What did you take on the locker room interview with Janoris Jenkins yesterday?
I was there, too.
I thought I thought that Jenkins was a little bit defensive. I thought he was a little bit aggressive because he wanted to assert that his track record here with the Giants was worth noting. And the guys who were going after him for the game in San Francisco were just trying to be critical of that one game. And Janoris just kept trying to point to the fact, okay, one game, bad game. What about the rest of my time here? And I understand that because you had the reporters who I think were being a little more vicious than they needed to be in trying to pin him down like he was the number one criminal on the face of the earth. And then you had Jenkins being a little more defensive than he had to be because he felt as though he was being put in that position.
And that's, I get that, you know, and
that's
I,
how I
think
feel.
That, you know, it's from a stance of being defensive, you're also not accepting responsibility. It seemed to me like he was just waving off. He was sarcastic. I mean, you know, it's one game out of 36, but, hey, he works one-sixth of the time of the regular economy. You know what
well,
I mean?
Well, Steve, I'll
but
say
we're,
this.
We expect you to go out there and be on your A game all 16 games.
Well, Steve,
you know,
I'll
one
say.
One game out of 36, I don't think that's an excuse.
Well,
know?
Steve, I don't think he said that he didn't think he played poorly.
He admitted he played poorly.
What he argued about was that he basically contended, and I won't pass judgment on this, but his contention was that I played poorly because my tackling technique was poor. And frankly, that's something that Steve Spagnuolo said during his press conference early in the day as well, while the reporters are trying to get him to admit that he basically checked out of the game and wasn't trying, and that's why he didn't tackle because he didn't want to. So that was kind of what the point of contention was and what the disagreement was between media and Jenkins. Jenkins did admit he played poorly and he had a bad game. No doubt about that. But the reason for that is kind of what the debate was between the writer and the player.
I understand.
I noted the comparison to, you know, with Casillas after the game. He was done. He was gone. He could have left, and he came back in to talk with reporters, you know.
Well, sure.
And to own up to, as a team member, as a team.
Well, he's
a
captain,
Steve. The responsibility of they had poor play. Whereas Janoris Jenkins, you know, he admitted it because he had to. You know, the media was in his face. He couldn't say, I played great. You know, of course he couldn't. You know, but he wasn't out there saying, look, I need to get my head back. I need to go in strong, play like the player I know I am and that you guys expect me to be.
Steve, honestly, that's why Jonathan Casillas is a captain. And the players in that locker room voted him as a captain because he's one of those guys who will stand up in front of every microphone and every camera, no matter what the score was and no matter how badly they played. That's what captains do. That's part of the responsibility.
Would you disagree? We need that from all 53.
Well, no, but that's why all 53 can't be a captain.
Now, Steve, you're right, though. You would like to see that from all 53, but unfortunately, that's not the reality of the world we live in. You know?
Well, one last question about the draft is, you know, well, not really a question, more of a statement.
Sure.
I'm a little concerned that because of the last few years' success at the number one quarterback pick and guys moving up to get those quarterbacks, that the Giants sitting pretty at, you know, one or five or wherever they may be are going to reach out and get something they really don't need, or that there really isn't the value there just because they've seen the success with Wentz and with Prescott and with Watson. And, you know, it's I'm a little concerned that we won't do like what Paul believes we should do and trade away all those picks and get a boatload of, trade away that pick and get a boatload of other ones, you know.
Steve, I talked to one of my veteran NFL gurus this week about this, and I said to him, you know, I've been vocal about the Giants need to get a minimum of two firsts and two seconds to get out of the top five or top three.
Yeah.
And he said to me, this is what you do. He said, I'm just telling you, from my experience in the league, you ask for six picks, okay? You ask for six, and you do your damnedest to get six picks for that pick. And I said, you're not going to get six. I don't think so. There's like supposedly three blue-chip quarterbacks. You're not going to get six. He goes, no. I'm asking for six, and I'm holding firm, and I'm going to try to squeeze six. If I can get five picks, I'm taking it. But I'm really not too eager to settle for four. I think you're underselling it. And I said, wow, you really think I get five picks for that?
Well,
he said, I think you got a chance.
Depends where the picks are, too. I mean, that's obviously a big part of
Well, I'm not moving down past 10. That's the stipulation.
I'm staying
in the top 10.
You're staying in the top 10. You're not getting five.
He says you ask for six, and what will happen is he thinks that there will be so many people who are desperate for quarterbacks that are sweating that you could ask for six. They'll converse with you,
but Paul,
and you might have to come down to five.
See, I
said I would take four.
Whatever. See, Paul, I agree with you because if you look at the history of the trades for those first couple picks the last couple years, it's generally been four picks. And I think that's the number where it's kind of landed. And again, I think, too,
he's
Steve,
right, though. If I start asking for four, they're going to try to get me down.
Of course. I get that. But I think it's important, too, here to know is that we don't know who's coming out yet. I mean, Sam Darnold might not come out. I mean, Rosen might not come out.
I think we should go linebacker first. I mean, if we get in the top 10, there should be a linebacker there that we should get. I mean,
hey,
we've been decimated the last couple
of
years. It's killed us.
Steve, I hear you, and thanks a lot for the call. I appreciate it. I understand the importance of the linebacker position, but rarely in the last 10 years has there been a linebacker taken in the top 10.
I mean,
they have those hybrid pass rushers sometimes, but a traditional 4-3 linebacker that you're thinking about, you know, besides, was Kuechly, he might have been 12. I'm not sure if he was even a top 10.
I don't think he was a top 10. I'll tell you what, the Niners got real lucky with Reuben Foster down there. Everybody thought he had some injury issues.
Well,
he's playing pretty good.
He does have injury issues.
Yeah, but he's playing pretty good.
He hasn't fit. The game against the Giants was the first game he actually played the whole game the whole year.
I know.
So he has that injury issue.
He's been productive.
But that's why he dropped, though, because of injuries.
Yes.
And that's proven to be true.
Been productive.
Miles Jack dropped because of injuries. Jalen Smith dropped because of injuries. I'm trying to think. I don't think there was another
linebacker.
I'd have to look. But it's hard to find the linebacker worth picking in the top 10. That's not one of those 3-4 hybrid pass rushers.
But I'm going to hold to what I'm saying, and I'm saying four picks to get up there. Whatever you want to start with, if my buddy says you start asking for six and work your way down, that's fine. But I'm not settling for any less than four picks.
I'll tell you what, folks. I'm going to give you a little tease here.
I'm just not.
Because we're not going to talk draft like Khalil Mack was fifth overall. Again, he was more of the hybrid pass rusher. Thank you. And then Kuechly was ninth.
He was ninth.
So he was a top ten.
I thought
he was probably the only traditional middle linebacker
thing.
Excellent job getting that for us. Only traditional middle linebacker type that's been a top ten pick over the past five, or I would say.
I mean, the position has been devalued.
All right. I'm going to do a little teasing now because we're not going to do a ton of draft in the next month and a half until the season's over. Honestly, once we get past Thanksgiving in that short week, I'll try to squeeze in some college tape here or there on guys that at least I know are coming out. Because I don't have enough time to be wasting time on guys that I'm not sure are coming out in the draft. So
no,
seniors I'll start looking at. So like Baker Mayfield to look at, things like that, because he's obviously played for 4 years. So I can look at the seniors. I could tell I'm going to be a man on a mountain this year, Paul, because Lance wants to trade down. You want to trade down, and to me, if you get to the point in this year's draft and you have a consensus in your front office where everybody believes a player is a franchise-level quarterback that could be your next Eli Manning, and you have a consensus on it, I think you have to pick that player. Now, if there's disagreement and you're not sure and you're like, ugh, I don't know about this guy, but he's the best guy there. Should we pick him? That's a different conversation. But if there's a belief that the guy that's sitting there and you're picking, let's say, third, and Baker Mayfield's sitting there and your scouting department up and down and your general manager and your director of college scouting all believe that he's a franchise quarterback in this league, it's very risky, in my opinion, to pass on that player.
Okay.
So I think it's going to be a very interesting draft season this year between you, Lance, and myself.
Well, Lance is smart. He listens to me.
If Lance was running the Browns or the Eagles, they wouldn't have Carson Wentz right now. And
yeah,
if you were running the Eagles, they wouldn't have Carson Wentz either.
No,
you liked Wentz, but I don't think you would have traded up for him.
Probably not, but I did like him.
And so did I. Both of us liked Wentz. Lance wanted no part of him. So I think there obviously, look, and me and Lance said this yesterday, there's positives and negatives to both sides of the equation here, because if you bet on one of those quarterbacks and the player fails,
I get it.
You're finished. You're in a lot of trouble. You're in a lot of trouble.
I just have so much faith in my scouting and the Giants scouting of Davis Webb last year that I'm not touching a quarterback. And I would say, unless you just decide you want to be stubborn, by the time we get through the combine and we get to the draft, you will see things the way we see them.
But you even done the work on the quarterbacks this year.
Don't have to.
Yes, you do.
Don't have to.
Paul, you haven't seen Davis Webb take a meaningful snap. How are you 100% sure?
Don't have to. I loved so much of what I saw last year, and I believe so much in what this kid's got right now that
Paul, I need
the picks.
Paul, I love what
it's
I've
all right.
I love what I've seen out of Davis Webb. He has every tool imaginable. He's mentally a great kid. He works his butt off. He's smart. I agree with all those things. But he hasn't seen it in a real game. I mean,
I get it.
Sometimes,
I get it, but how much more of a lock are these guys?
You have to agree though that sometimes these things don't translate.
Yeah, but you're going to go into the draft and draft one of these guys when they have no more pro snaps than Davis Webb
does. Yeah, but Davis Webb was also a third-round pick.
I don't care where he was picked. It matters to me what he is.
But you don't know what he is. There's a better chance of a quarterback that is considered a top-five talent succeeding than a quarterback that's picked in the third round. That's just a mathematical thing.
Well,
there's a better chance.
So there's a better chance that one of these guys will be better than what Tom Brady was because he was picked in the sixth round?
No, but if you take all the sixth-round quarterbacks compared to all the first-round quarterbacks, I guarantee you there's a lot better first-round quarterbacks than sixth-round quarterbacks.
I would agree with that.
I mean, that's just math.
I would agree with that.
That's all I'm saying.
Hey, I'm not moving off of this. I know how I feel, and I'm sold on it, and I'm
not
moving.
So you're saying even if you look at all the tape and you see one of these quarterbacks and you think it's the next Tom Brady, you don't think the Giants should pick him?
I do not. The Giants need players more than they need that one pick.
All right.
They've got their future quarterback. If I can get two firsts, two seconds, and if my buddy's right and I can even get another, like a third-round pick thrown in there too, I am making that trade so fast I can't even blink my eyes. That's how quickly I'm making that trade because I need the bodies. I need the bodies. I got too many holes I got to fill on this team.
Did you want to trade down when they picked Eli?
I was a big Ben Roethlisberger guy.
But you wanted a quarterback that year.
I wanted to take Ben. Okay. No. That year, I wanted to keep Kerry Collins. But knowing that the Giants were going to draft
that
a quarterback.
That was my question, though. If you were the general manager, you would not have picked a quarterback that year.
No, I would not have.
At least you're consistent.
I would not have.
At least you're consistent.
But when it became obvious they were taking a quarterback, I said Ben is the guy they should take.
Now,
and I would have been wrong. And I freely admit to this.
You wouldn't have been. I mean, Ben Roethlisberger is a hell of a player.
He wouldn't have been right here. He's in the right place.
I agree with that.
Eli's in the right place.
And Philip Rivers ended up in the right place, too.
Absolutely.
They all wound up in the right
all
place.
All three of them.
I agree 100%.
If any one of those three guys had been in the other guy's shoes, it would not have worked out as well. I guarantee it.
Eli had the right personality for New York out of those three guys. And the right
demeanor. No question.
I agree 100%.
Anyway.
Roldy, I had you waiting a little bit long, but you have the final 4 minutes of the show, my friend. Go ahead.
Yo, Paulie, you're funny, man. You're a funny guy, man.
Every
time I hear you, you're funny. What do you see out of Davis Webb for you to say he's the quarterback of the future? In my opinion, I thought that was a stupid move by Jerry Reese.
You didn't
but
like
then again, Jerry Reese always does a lot of, you know, stupid moves in the draft in the previous years. So I don't know where you saw that, okay, Davis Webb is the future. franchise quarterback.
Davis Webb, besides the fact that he's big and he's got some mobility and he's got a cannon of an arm and he's incredibly smart, all right, and we know about him being a coach's son. We know about his work ethic and his work habits. Every box that you could want from a quarterback when he's coming out of school, okay, he checks everyone.
Now, he didn't check everyone. Hold on, Rolly, one second. He isn't like Aaron Rodgers, mobile one. And two, he didn't play in a pro system in college. Those are two boxes he did not check.
Well,
in fairness.
But that's not because he couldn't check it. It's because it wasn't available to him. They had him play shotgun all the time. That's not his fault.
Well, I know, but he's also not Lamar Jackson or these
guys
running around.
But see, I don't want my quarterback to do that. So that's a box that he doesn't have to check for me. So therefore, he checks all my boxes.
Yeah, but Paul, you're acting like you. All right, go ahead.
So this is not even about the Giants. This is about you. At the end of the day, because
we're giving an opinion as to what you would do.
If these quarterbacks are coming out of college and they into the draft, if they're right there and we're picking top three, four. I'm with John. I'm picking one of these quarterbacks.
Now, Roldy.
I'm not picking a Davis Webb that a foolish Jerry Reese decided to make a trade to move up to go get a Davis Webb in the third round.
Now, Roldy, here's the thing. Here's the thing, Roldy. Like Paul, I love Davis Webb's tools, too. I think he's at the right size. He's got great arm strength. His attitude's great. He's smart. He works really hard. All those boxes are checked. And if the Giants did not have the opportunity to draft a quarterback for whatever reason, do I think he's a guy you can develop and you have a real chance of him becoming a starter? Absolutely. But again, I haven't done the work on these quarterbacks yet, so I'm not saying this is what I feel about this class because I have not seen them enough. But if I look at these guys and I think that, boy, this guy's a can't-miss number one 15-year starter for me, I would have a hard time passing him up. And you know what? Then if you get to the point where Webb and whoever your new quarterback is are splitting snaps in the preseason and both end up looking really good, you know what? You can go trade one of those guys next year for two first-round picks.
Exactly.
Well,
Paul doesn't want to look outside the box. He wants to do it for Paul.
I'm going to give you another hypothetical. Rolly, I'm going to give you a hypothetical. I go in and get those picks, and I tell you with those picks, the Giants can get a stud offensive lineman, a stud pass rushing linebacker, another guy for the defensive line who can get to the quarterback, and a star wide receiver. Four guys who might be able to immediately give you at least rotational plays in their rookie season. You're going to tell me that you could not use those four players?
Of course you can.
No, I'm going to be honest with you. If I'm the GM and I have a stud quarterback, then you can't miss quarterback, I'm going to get it. Because at the main thing is the quarterback is the most important position in the whole team.
Can I ask you, Rolly?
If I have a quarterback that I cannot miss and he's there, I'm going for that
quarterback. What happened to Tim Couch, Ryan Leaf, David Carr?
If Davis Webb is doing well, then I'll make a trade.
In fairness, the same way.
That's going to be a franchise quarterback that's going to be there for years and years to come.
Ryan Leaf, Tim Couch, David Carr, franchise quarterbacks all at the top of the draft, drafted by horsemen or
Davis
teams.
Davis Webb is going to be a Tim Couch. That's what he's going to be.
You guys are funny.
He's going to be a
Tim.
Can I ask another quick question? All right, go.
This is going to be fun.
It's all right.
This is going to be a fun spring, man.
It's all right.
Go ahead, Rolly. Finish up.
Go ahead.
No, finish up. No, Rolly.
I was simply going to say it's okay to agree to disagree. I'm not saying that you're wrong. I'm simply stating that this is my strong preference, and I'm not moving off it. It doesn't mean that you're right or you're wrong. Okay?
All right. I hear you. But, you know, here's another thing, too. I can't believe I have to agree with Charlie, man. Jesus Christ, man. But this man was freaking right, man.
About what?
I mean, you know, in order for us to even talk about this draft, we got to get rid of Jerry Reese and Ben McAdoo. Because I feel like if we do indeed have a top three pick, I don't feel comfortable. And I know Giants fans out there do not feel comfortable or feel safe to know that Jerry Reese would make that pick or if it's going to be a good pick. And I think at the end of the season, Jerry Reese has to go. Ben McAdoo has to go because the team is not responding to the guy. Yes, I get it. He was 11-5, but that's what everybody wants to go at. But you got to remember, even when we were 11-5, the offense was not clicking. They were not gelling. It was almost like he didn't know what to do. Ben McAdoo is a good coordinator. We're not going to deny that. But is he a head coach? doubt it. Not doubt it. No, he's not a head coach.
All right,
that's how I feel. But one more thing, John, real quick. What do you think about Frank Ntilikina right now? is LeBron right? Do you think that we should have never passed on Dennis Smith?
I am very happy with Frank. It's a lot easier to develop a guy offensively than it is to develop a guy as a passer and a defender, and Frank does those other
things. Frank is too timid. Nah,
he'll
usually
grow.
Have open lanes, and
he'll
just passes the ball first. I'm like, damn.
No, Rolly, you're right.
Got the hole open.
Rolly, look, you're right. I think he needs to get more aggressive. He will get more aggressive. You got to give him some time. But he right now is a – Dennis Smith will never become the defensive player that Frank Ntilikina is right now. We got to run, Roldy. Thanks, pal.
All right.
Appreciate
it. I don't care if it's the NFL draft or the NBA draft. The debates and the varied opinions
and it's fun.
Will always create a stir going in and usually create a stir on the backside because
correct,
very rarely
yes.
do both sides turn out to be right.
I'll take Frank. Thank you. And you know what, though? And that's the thing. And, you know, we debate the best course of action for the Giants to take. There isn't a wrong or a right one. There are two sides
really
to the coin.
There's really not.
There are certainly good points on both sides to have that debate, and I think it'll be interesting to see how everything plays out.
And that's why it is such a cottage industry.
Yes. And we're going to have a lot of that talk over the next 4 or 5 months. Hello?
I really wish we could put it off till then, but unfortunately the season has kind of made us delve into that just a little bit earlier than we wanted to.
I'm going to have to look at college tape in November.
I'm not doing it. I got too much college basketball I got to deal with before then. Let's say goodbye.
Hey, your games will start till January. You got time in November and December. Thanks for Paul DeTito. We'll see you on Sunday. You want to check more of this type of stuff out, tune to WFAN 1130 on Sunday for the Coors Light Giants Game Day pregame show. Me, Paul, Lance, Feegs, or if you're at the stadium, come to the MetLife stage. You'll be there live. Then, of course, you have the game, and we'll be with you on the postgame show after. For Paul DeTito, I'm John Schmelk. Have a great day. Thanks for watching Big Blue Kickoff Live on Giants.com. We'll see you next time.